When you want to grow your business, use Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Seamlessly collaborate with your team using a suite of built-in tools and features to make your workday easier, like huddles to schedule impromptu meetings and avoid another calendar invite, or Workflow Builder, which lets you automate routine tasks so you can spend more time on the work that matters most. Slack. Grow your business here. Learn more at slack.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name is Joey Weaver. He is Mike McDaniel. Mike, week 9 in the books for the ACC. Everything went as planned. Nothing, there's no problems at all. Everybody's great. How are you? You ready to recap these totally normal and orderly games?
Smiling from ear to ear, baby. Let's go.
I figure we have to start with the game of the week in the ACC. There's only one place we can do that. That's in Hartford, Connecticut, where, unfortunately, our Boston College Eagles fell to the UConn Huskies by a final score of 13-3. Mike, I don't know what you did. I feel like this is your responsibility, considering the way that we went into this weekend. And just as a reminder, Producer Scott, could you play that sound of like what we did to prepare for this game?
Yeah, I'm locking up UConn.
Yeah, Mike, you did that. That was you, and I couldn't believe it. And turns out UConn was not only a 7.5-point underdog, just you didn't need the points at all. They just won that thing on the field.
7-2 against the spread.
You had a pretty good
week. I am the smartest man alive!
Yo, what was that, 3-0 on locks?
I believe so.
That was a big week for
sound
me.
Again.
Big week for me. And then, hey, man. Listen, on the actual games I placed bets on this weekend, like outside this podcast, I went 6-3 against
the
spread. So I good weekend.
Got it
betting.
Back after a couple of rough weeks.
I got it back big time. I really don't look at my week 8 results. So here's the thing. Boston College might be the worst team in the Power 5.
It's on the table.
That's kind of my takeaway here. So BC really struggled to run the ball against UConn, which is a statement. This is a UConn defense I mentioned on the preview had not been playing that bad, right? But they weren't playing so well that Boston College shouldn't have been able to run the football on them at all, right? And that's basically what happened here. Phil Dracovic was the leading rusher. He had 14 carries for 29 yards. That's non-sack adjusted numbers. But they really couldn't establish anything in the running game whatsoever. Pat Garbo III had 6 carries for 13 yards. Like, they had nothing going in the running game whatsoever. Passing game was not much better. Phil Dracovic, 12 of 19 for 155 and 2 picks against UConn. Mm-hmm. Right? So, again, like, Boston College has a ton of injuries up front. So, I do want to mention that right off the bat. Like, they are really struggling with... Coming into the year, they were struggling with just the offensive line, the quality of the players there. You know, that was going to be an issue coming into the year. Christian Mahogany was the only returning starter. He tore his ACL before the season started. Like, they were young up front, right? And then a lot of their players up front started having injuries. And it feels like Pete Thamel from ESPN has been tweeting out during college game day basically every week that Boston College is going to be without 2 or 3 starters on the offensive line for that game.
Yeah.
Right? It seems like that's continuously happening. That happened again on Saturday. BC was down a couple starters up front. So that kind of tells the story here a bit. BC just doesn't have the horses in the trenches.
Yeah.
They just don't, right? And
which is unusual.
They're now 2-6. It is. Definitely unusual. And Phil Dracovic has been pretty bad, but like it's not all on him either.
No, it's
right?
Not.
Like he's kind of running for his life back there. Has he looked as good as like 2020 Phil Dracovic did, you know, during the COVID year when he was in his first year as a starter after transferring from Notre Dame? No, he doesn't look that good. Last year, he looked fine, and then he hurt his wrist, and he came back late in the year and certainly was not himself. This version of Phil Dracovic this year is somewhere in between those two guys, right? He's not as good as 2020, but he's certainly better than when he was coming back from injury last year, right? He does look healthy. Until the third quarter in this game when he got knocked out of the game with a lower body injury, took a pretty big hit middle of the third quarter. So he's out of the game. Emmett Moorhead comes in, 9 of 18, 104 and a pick. you know, the rest of the way. They were desperately trying to find offense here late to try to crawl their way back into this game. On the scoreboard, they were never really out of it. They were down 10-3 at halftime. It was 10-3 until the fourth quarter. UConn kicked a field goal. BC never felt like they were really in the game, if that makes sense. Like, they were there on the scoreboard, but they were never really in it. They turned the ball over way too much against a UConn team that's not nearly as poorly coached as they've been in recent years. Like, I think Jim Mora got made fun of for taking that UConn job. A lot of people are like, hey man, what are you doing? Leaving your studio gig with ESPN to go take that job. Like, are you out of your mind? And a lot of people are wondering if UConn had even made the right hire, you know, bringing in Jim Mora to coach. It was weird, right? But the returns have looked pretty good so far. Like, when's the last time UConn's been 4-5 through 9 games? It's been a while. So they're definitely improved. This is just such a bad look for BC. It's cool for UConn to win this game, but it's just such a terrible look for Boston College, man. That's kind of my takeaway here. You can't lose this game to UConn, man. They've been too bad over the last, I don't know, better part of the last decade. It's just a terrible, terrible look. We have to start having a conversation about Jeff Hafley.
I was going to say, and it's the fact that we're at the tail end of year three, and like you said, and we've outlined this, and I completely understand. There's been injuries before the year. There were transfers. There were graduations. Like, I get it. I kind of understand where we're at, but the fact is, like, we're pretty deep into year three. And your offensive front in particular is in a place where you can't really block UConn. Some of that's bad luck, I get it, but also, like, you got to be building up this program year over year,
right,
to be able to block UConn. That's my biggest concern about the whole thing. It's, I don't know, and I wonder about the future of this program at this point. I mean, we saw Zay Flowers not out there on the last drive. Don't get the impression that there was, like, an injury there. Didn't see, Phil Dracovic didn't finish the game again. He got banged up. You wonder where his head's at. I don't know. This is a bit of a touchy place. Not really where we thought Boston College would be, or really where I think we think they should be, you know, late in year three for Jeff Hafley.
This just feels... It feels eerily similar to what I just watched at Virginia Tech with Justin Fuente.
Like, year one, really great.
Pretty, really great year one. Year two, not bad. Year three, starting to show some troubling trends. Year four is going to be like, are you going to continue to do this? And then you kind of go another year and a half until you fire him. Like, I just wonder if Jeff Hafley's the guy here, right? And the whole point of making this Jeff Hafley hire when he was the DC at Ohio State and you brought him in here, the whole reason to make this hire was you were going to raise the ceiling at Boston College from 7 wins every year, which is what Steve Adazio was doing. Mm-hmm. He wanted to raise that ceiling, kind of break through that, and he looked like he was going to be the guy to make that happen. Now I'm looking at this and I'm wondering, man, what the hell?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
Yeah, well, what are we doing here?
What are we doing here? Yeah, and... Maybe they get healthier on the offensive line. They show, next year, not their offseason of development, that maybe they're not as bad as they've looked. But I don't know. It's hard for me to really buy that, though, because the offensive line has been so bad that it makes me wonder, like, how much better are these particular players going to get to kind of instill confidence year over year? I don't know. There's always room for improvement, but, man, it's just been so bad up front. And Phil Dracovic has looked so inept this year, and some of that's on him, some of it's not, and the running game just doesn't exist. Like, Pat Garwood III was the leading receiver in this game. He had 5 catches for 89 yards, which is pretty good.
Zay Flowers has 2 catches and 1 carry. Why is he only getting 3 touches here, by the way?
Right.
Force feed that guy the ball. Come on.
Yeah. So I didn't really get the game plan. I know they're bad up front, but, like, you got to find a way to score. By not being able to score points on UConn is a pretty, pretty alarming thing. I mean, BC was 3 of 13 on third down here.
Worth mentioning too that they were -5 in turnovers. You had 2 picks by Dracovic, 1 from Emmett Moorhead. Zay Flowers lost a fumble. Jeremiah Franklin lost a fumble. UConn didn't turn it over at all. I mean, if this is an even turnover margin, it might be a bit of a different game. I mean, you outgained UConn, at least on a total yardage basis, not necessarily a per-play basis. But, I mean, that's a way to give away a game, and you're making mistakes like that. It's tough to get over.
Yeah, just not a good look here. And, like, time of possession was split. So, I mean, you would anticipate that – I don't know. You would anticipate in a game where, you know, BC comes in clearly with more talent that they'd be able to kind of dominate time of possession. They actually, by letter of the law, trailed time of possession by, like, a minute. Yeah. So, I mean, it was pretty split right down the middle, and not being able to run the ball. It's just a lot of troubling items coming out of this game for the Eagles.
Yep. Tough times in Chestnut Hill, Mike. We'll see where Boston College goes from here.
That was the first
bet cashes. Yeah,
that was the first UConn Power 5 win since 2016 against Virginia.
Against Virginia. Hell yeah.
Hey, Bronco Mendenhall, year one.
Let's go there next, shall we?
UConn 13, Boston College 3. Speaking of totally orderly, oh boy, here we go. And this, by the way, this is maybe coaching staff agnostic for this game. This kind of goes for both sidelines here.
Yeah.
Speaking of orderly and just, you know, clean, well-played games, Miami 14, Virginia 12 in four overtimes, Mike. This game set college football back decades.
No touchdowns in four overtimes.
No touchdowns. See, that was going to be my joke, because I was going to say that we played four overtimes and nobody got into the end zone the entire game, with the exception of the fact that apparently they did on the very final play of the game to convert a two-point conversion. That's what it took to get into the end zone for either of these teams in this game. Absolutely ridiculous. The first half, the drive chart. Punt, 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 field goal. I think I got all that right. I believe that's... Yeah, right? What is that, like 9-10 punts? Goodness. And then you get in the second half, and it's a totally different just nightmare. Field goal, punt, turnover on downs, punt, field goal, punt, punt, field goal. And that's how we got to overtime at 6-6.
I mean, we could set a beat to that drive chart.
Punt, 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 punt. Yeah.
Making Avicii proud, RIP. So, look, this was actually, it's pretty funny because this was actually a pretty cleanly played game.
Weirdly. Not a single turnover.
Weirdly.
Like,
not a single turnover, only 72 yards worth of penalties combined between the two teams.
On 11 flags.
So... This is the weirdest box score I've ever seen in my entire life, and the box score doesn't really do justice how just terrible the game was. This was made for Jefferson Pilot Sports.
Yeah,
Raycom. Whatever.
Jefferson Pilot got their money's worth on this one.
They got their money's worth, man. Oh,
that contract.
Man. John Swafford lining his pockets.
They were combined 10 for 33 on third downs. They had a grand total of 31 first downs between the two teams. Like. My gosh.
I understand that Miami didn't have their starting quarterback, right? I understand, you know, Tyler Van Dyke was hurt, didn't play, didn't practice all week, so it wasn't a huge surprise they didn't play. Jake Garcia, 15-29 for 125 yards.
Against Virginia's defense.
A very bad defense. Miami had 272 yards total in a game that went into four overtimes. Virginia, you know, before Virginia Tech can laugh at this too, but before Virginia fans laugh at that, they only had 327 yards in a game that went four full quarters and four overtimes. I'm kind of ashamed to be a fan of a team and an alum of a team that is a member of the same conference as these two schools. I'm even more ashamed that Virginia Tech lost to the Miami team that won this football game. That's astonishing to me. This was brutal. Neither team had a first down, right, in the first two overtimes. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, we went four possessions on the first two overtimes, and I think the most yardage gained was like 6 yards on any of those possessions. Like, if those overtime possessions started on your own 25 and not the opponent's 25, they'd still be playing right now. Like, that game would not be over yet. They'd still be punting. Some say he's still punting to this day.
To this day, yeah.
By the way, can we just nominate the entire Miami offense for the Kobe Bryant Memorial Volume Shooter of the Week Award?
I was going to say, I'm looking at this now, and Henry Parrish actually had a decent day. He averaged almost 5 yards per carry. Outside of him, though, it was kind of scary hours.
Train wreck. The entire Miami offense racked up 272 yards on 70 plays, good for an average of 3.9 yards per play. And I know that, and I was able to do that math really quickly because they averaged both 3.9 yards per pass attempt and 3.9 yards per rush attempt the entire game. Goodness.
So I said that thing on, and I want to kind of go back on something I said last week, and this is going to be a theme because we have some games to get to later that I need to kind of repent my sins for, so to speak. I said on the Saturday Night Fever recap that we did after week 8 that I thought that Mario Cristobal was, you know, the right hire and the guy long term. Bro. 14-12 against that Virginia team.
King.
We're absolutely sure he's the guy long term.
Man.
Right? Are we sure?
I have my questions. With what I've seen from this Miami team this year, man.
I'm not so sure anymore.
I'm not either.
All it took was another week of data. I'm now not so sure. I'm back to being not so sure.
I was going
to
say, this is a game, by the way, where the only thing that I feel like either team's fan base really has to feel good about is Miami fans can feel good about the fact that 14 points is more than 12 points. And that is where it ends. I guess maybe give credit to the defenses for, you know, keeping scoring from happening. But, like, I mean, you can't come up with trick plays or do something, I mean, to get the ball in the end zone. By the way, there was a sequence here in the second quarter or in the second half, which Virginia had a turnover on downs on a drive where their final four plays started with a first and goal at the 1 yard line. Run for 1 yard to the two, so a loss of one. Completed pass for a gain of one. Incomplete pass.
Hell yeah.
So you ran four plays, you lost a yard, you gained a yard, and then you threw two incomplete passes from the 1 yard line. That's what we got. And so then Virginia turned it over on downs. Just incredible. By the way, if you would have just like kicked a field goal in retrospect, you would have won the game.
The still shot of Tony Elliott just standing there with his hands on his hips. Just like in shock.
Gosh, which one?
That he lost that
it's
game.
Week 9.
It was
He's
no
been
context.
Doing that all season.
No context. No context. College football. Had the screen grab of him just kind of sitting there like this.
It's like that, what is the soccer fan meme? Who's like the really disappointed looking dad, like standing in the stands.
Yeah. It's pretty much what it was.
Was that like Algeria?
Somebody tweeted a side by side of that and I was cracking up. I forget who it was. It was so funny.
Perfect.
You know, Mario Cristobal left a Oregon team that could absolutely make the college football playoff. He left that team for this.
Man.
Couldn't be me.
I really don't think this roster is in like an awful place to where, well, this just happens. It's just going to take time. Like we have said, this like Manny would not be doing this right now. Like Manny would not be messing around. And I mean, they probably would have lost at least one game that was kind of a head scratcher. But like they'd probably be at least one, if not two wins better than they are right now. So
I said this about Notre Dame too, We'll get to them in a minute. I said this about Notre Dame also. Like, it didn't have to be year zero.
No. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Honestly, don't even count it that way. Like, year zero, like, Duke should have been year zero and somehow is not.
Yes.
These teams should not be year zero, but kind of are looking that way. And it's that's not a good thing. You don't get that benefit of the doubt.
Right. Yeah, like, there are some teams in the ACC that, and I mean, I guess that, that Duke is, like, the example where that should have been year zero, and it's not. Like, Virginia Tech, I think we all agreed, probably year zero, and it is. Miami should not have been year zero. Virginia, even. They lost a lot, but they, when you return Brennan Armstrong at quarterback, it should not be year zero.
And all of the skill talent on offense. Like, all of his receivers are back. You got the quarterback back.
Yeah.
I mean, again, the big question there was the offensive line all totally just abandoning Virginia. And there was definitely some shenanigans, it sounds like, that happened with the outgoing coaching staff and how they encouraged or maybe just suggested that these offensive linemen look elsewhere and, like, all that stuff. So I get that, but I don't know. Still seems like you should be able to cook up
something.
That also
just happened. That also, yeah, and that also just happens with a lot of outgoing coaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? So, like, I have trouble using that as an excuse, especially with, you know, like you mentioned, UVA returned a ton of talent.
Yeah.
At receiver and in the running back room and at quarterback. 12 points against that, by the way, against that Miami defense, 12 points with that offensive talent, 12 points. This is a bad look for both teams is the takeaway here. We're all dumber for being a part of this. I think it's where I'm at with it.
There was also a sequence very, very late in regulation that we're going to have to revisit here later in the show.
Yep.
We
have an award winner.
We do. Miami 14, Virginia 12, if you're ready to move on, Mike.
I am. You pick.
Should we talk about let me ask you this, Mike. What was your favorite Wake Forest turnover in the third quarter against Louisville?
Wow. I have six of them to choose from.
There are a lot of options. Yeah. Louisville 48. Wake Forest 21. Just like I said, Louisville was going to win this game on the field. It was a stinky number. We steered into it, and we were rewarded for it. I don't know what to tell you. You got to start listening to me on these picks.
I can't find the tweet. We had a fan reach out. I'm sorry. A fan of the show reach out, and they tweeted at the both of us, and they said, "Hey, Joey, you were right." And I said, yes, I need to eat crow on the podcast, which I will. I was wrong about Wake Forest. I got it wrong. But, and Joey, you kind of said this on the flip side. You were like, yes, I was right, but I totally could have predicted 8 turnovers by Wake Forest.
Yeah.
By the way, matching the record set by Miami a week ago that hadn't been done in an FBS game in
15 years,
what was that?
Or something?
2009.
Hadn't been done in a Power 5 game in 13 years. Hadn't been done in an FBS game since 2017.
Unbelievable. And, it was just bizarre the way it happened. So this game goes into halftime. Louisville misses a field goal with about a minute left. Wake gets it back. Can't really do anything with it.
Can we talk about that missed field goal real
quick,
though?
Sure, yeah.
Louisville made that field goal twice.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Gosh.
They made that field goal twice. They were icing the kicker, and then they got called for a false start, right? Wasn't it a false start? And they got pushed back 5 yards and then missed it.
Well, so you got called for a false start, but it was one of those where they blew the whistle too late, got the snap off, kicked the ball, goes to the uprights. Called back, false start. Do it again. Line it up from a 37-yard field goal. Line it up, snap the ball, kick it up. Through the uprights, good. Nope, flag on the play, called for holding. Which, by the way, when's the last time you saw holding called on a field goal attempt? That was a wonky call. So now back it up 10 more yards. Now it's a 47-yard field goal. Kick is up, and it is to the right, and it is a miss. And that's, I mean, awesome. So that's how we go in 14-13. Wake has the lead at halftime. Wake's...
Oh, and by the way, pause. Dave Clawson was speaking to the
fence.
Yes. Said, incredible. Incredible sound.
Good timing.
I didn't see that one coming. Very good. Clawson, I totally lost my train of thought. That was so good. Clawson was going into halftime talking to the sideline reporter, and he said, you know, he told Sam Hartman, hey, you know, we're good. We had a rough start, but we kind of got the offense back underneath us in the second quarter. Hey, we're right in this game. We're making some plays. Defense has been really good. We're right there, 14-13. You know, we couldn't have played worse in the first quarter, and now we're in the lead at halftime. Got to feel good about where we're at.
Wake makes a lot of great halftime adjustments. Like, they're in good shape here. They've got a one-point lead. Like, yeah, they're right where they want to be.
Yes.
And then what happened?
They got outscored 35-7 in the second half. That's what happened.
Yeah. And 35-0 in the third quarter, because, Mike, the Wake drive chart here. Pick six, fumble, interception, fumble, three and out. Pick six, and then they fumbled again. Like, it was unbelievable. So, and a couple of these, like, I think three of these were Sam Hartman fumbles on plays where their offensive line just, like, got beat like a drum, basically. He got hit from behind at one point. He got hit in the front at one point. Like, all these causing the ball to come out.
Yes.
A couple of the interceptions he threw, I think one of them was tipped, and that wasn't great. And I don't know if you saw what happened after that. It was a tipped ball that was intercepted by Monty Montgomery, the linebacker for Louisville. He starts running it back. He fakes a pitch to one of his teammates, and then like takes four or five more steps, and then actually pitches it, and his teammate goes and runs it down the field from there like 15, 20 yards. That was awesome. And then Louisville scored a one-play, 9-yard touchdown drive. This thing got just totally out of hand instantly, and this thing just snowballed. The only thing I can think to compare this to for Wake was that bowl game a couple of years ago against Wisconsin where they got into, like, the third quarter and Sam Hartman threw four straight interceptions on, like, consecutive passing attempts. It was wild.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it was wild. And I remember that one game of I think it was 2014, too, is that Georgia Tech Orange Bowl team that played Pittsburgh, that I think they were up 35-0 in the first quarter because Pitt turned it over like five times. I mean, it was unbelievable. Yeah. Just bizarre.
I think you texted a group chat after the third or fourth turnover of the third quarter. It was hard to keep track because there were so many of them. After a third or fourth turnover, and I think your text said, wow, this is really snowballing for Wake, huh? It's like, yeah, I'll say. It was just like they couldn't stop turning it over. It was incredible. Yeah. It was like every time I looked up, Louisville had the ball again in the red zone.
And I will say so they pulled Sam Hartman at the end of the third quarter. So the final play of the third quarter is Wake has it 4th-and-3 on the Louisville 17-yard line. They're going for it because at this point they're down 41-14. 41-14. They're going for it. Sam Hartman throws a pass. He's kind of throwing like an in route to his left. And I guess you call it underthrowing the receiver who had broken in and he threw it like behind the receiver. And the defender was right there. I mean, caught it and just ran, took off running. And I don't think anybody touched him basically for 87 yards or something. They pulled Sam Hartman after that. Mitch Griffiths comes in to finish out the fourth quarter, see if they can get anything done. They could not. From there, fumble, interception, and then finally a touchdown. But I will note that touchdown for Wake Forest came immediately following a drive that was 11 plays, 55 yards, and an interception, where Mitch Griffiths threw a pass intercepted by Quincy Riley, who then fumbled on the return. So Wake recovered on the 11-yard line and then scores a touchdown in three plays. And that was how we got to 21 points. But, yeah, Wake just gets rolled here by turnovers and some of it's bad luck for sure, but I don't know. Louisville's defense, I will say this, quietly starting to play pretty well. And obviously when you get eight turnovers and a half of football, like the stats are going to look good, but Wake was not having an easy time running the ball. Like they were. This was a struggle for a lot of the game for Wake's offense, even when they weren't turning the ball over. So, you know, credit to Louisville for that. And then, I mean, Tyon Evans had a really good game, only 11 carries, but for 106 yards and a score, including a pretty long run. Louisville just, I mean, Louisville's offense, I thought, played pretty well in this game. Malik Cunningham had a pretty good day. Passing stats were, you know, fine, but he had a couple of rushing touchdowns on the ground as well. So, good effort from Louisville, I thought. I thought that they were dead in the water. I thought Scott Satterfield is as good as fired. I don't know. They might be able to win at least one more, if not two, get bowl eligible, and you know, we'll see what happens from there. But I don't know. It was a good performance from Louisville. Kind of just an unlucky thing from Wake. I would be curious to know what would have happened if this hadn't just totally snowballed on Wake and all the turnovers and everything the way that it did.
I mean, Louisville looked like the better team, even in the first half, to me. I mean, I know Wake was leading 14-13 mm-hmm. at halftime, but Louisville looked like the better team in the first half. And, you know, we just talked about the turnovers at length in the second half, but, like, I thought Wake Forest's offensive line was overwhelmed by Louisville's pass rush. I thought that Louisville's front seven played exceptionally well against the mm-hmm. run. Wake just didn't really have a ton to offer up front in this football game, and it made life difficult on Sam Hartman and that offense in the first mm-hmm. half before all the turnovers happened. And that's why you had Dave Clawson going into halftime talking about, you know, we didn't play particularly well in the first half, but we have the lead. It's almost like he felt fortunate that they were kind of sitting where mm-hmm. they were. But this was I haven't seen the post-game win expectancy numbers from Bill C. I'm curious what those mm-hmm. were. I have a feeling that Louisville's post-game win expectancy was probably still pretty high, right? I mean, you take the crazy turnover luck out of it, it's had to have been mm-hmm. high. I mean, Wake did not look like the better team in this football game in the first half, even when they had the lead, I guess is what I'm getting at. So take the turnovers out of it, you know, maybe, you know, obviously would be a lot closer. I mean, if these teams play 10 times, I don't think either team wins by 27 very often. Like, this might be the only time that happens, right? So I think this, you know, this final spread of four scores is, you know, almost entirely due to the crazy turnover luck that occurred in the second mm-hmm. half. But I thought Louisville was the better team in this football game. Yeah. So Louisville winning is not what surprised me. It's more of the
margin.
The spread and how it kind of snowballed and got away. Yeah, the margin, exactly. Yeah,
I agree with that. I think if they played 10 times, it might be 5-5. It might be 6-4. You know, I think they were reasonably evenly matched, which is interesting when you see a team with a number 10 right next to their name going on the road against an unranked team that has been talking about firing its coach all year. And for those to be evenly matched, I mean, I think it reflects well on Louisville. Because Wake has been legit good all year, and this was, you know, Louisville played with them and caused a lot of these issues for Wake. So
Wake is always going to struggle against teams that I don't want to say struggle. They're always going to be in a dogfight, I guess is the better term. They're not necessarily going to struggle and lose outright like this, but they're always going to be in a dogfight or in a tight game against teams that recruit well and have a bunch of really good talent in the trenches, especially. Mm-hmm. So Clemson, good example of that. I know that game went to a few overtimes. Wake could have easily won that game. But, you know, Clemson, very talented. Mm-hmm. Louisville, very talented. Not well coached, really, in most games, but looked good on Saturday.
They had their moments.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scott Satterfield was his bag, by the way, with some of the play calling. We had a 28-yard touchdown pass from running back Braden Smith in the third quarter. At one point in the middle of all the turnovers, that was the moment it was like, oh, this is what we're doing here. Like, he's feeling himself.
When that happened, I was like, man, we're calling halfback pass up a few scores with Wake Forest turning the ball up, being allergic to taking care of the football. I'm like, this is Satterfield's trying to bury this game today, and as he should. I mean, he needs all the style points he can get at this point.
Absolutely, Louisville 48. Wake Forest 21. Mike, I know where we're going next, but we have to remind the people that this recap brought to you by Section 103.com. the internet's premier place for buying all things wonderful Georgia Tech apparel. It has got all things in the official Tech gold. It's got t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, something for men, women, children, something for the whole family. We've got the official word marks, got that ATL logo still available. There's hoodies again for it's kind of cooling off here. The new coach hoodie, kind of fashioned after the one that we see Brent Key running up and down the sideline wearing. That one is available as well. I love my Section 103, and you will as well. Use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order at section103.com. If you're planning on going to one of these games later this year, it's almost basketball season. We've had some fall baseball going on. Like, if you're looking for something to wear to go support the Jackets, go to section103.com, and once again, use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order. Mike, Florida State 41, Georgia Tech 16. I don't know. It seems fine. This is kind of what we expected. Florida State actually looked pretty good, I think, at times. I guess they hit some big plays. It felt like they struggled to be methodical. Georgia Tech's defense, I thought, played okay, but there were just a few big broken plays that Florida State was able to score on. Zach Gibson plays the first two drives for Georgia Tech, and then Zach Pyron, the true freshman, comes in after that. For a true freshman, hadn't played before. Like, this was his first college football action, basically. I was okay with what he looked like. He looks like a gamer. It sounds like there's some really good leadership stuff where apparently I just love the image in my head of a true freshman getting his first action. He plays for like four drives. You go into halftime. Apparently the rumor is that he tore into some of his teammates in the locker room about doing their jobs, that kind of thing. 18-year-old true freshman played about not even a half of football, yelling at his teammates, getting them in line. And I love stuff like that.
So, oh, yeah.
Good on that. Florida State just way too much here for Georgia Tech. They scored late. It seemed like they were ready to just run out the clock, get out of here, get healthy, and be ready for Miami next week. But they do score late. And then I think the funny thing is we'll see what shows up on Bad Beats with Scott Van Pelt on Monday. But so Georgia Tech has the ball, and with the final play of the game, and this is a hilarious comparison to last week when Zach Gibson just steps out of bounds with a chance to win the game. Zach Pyron down 41-10 with, you know, the time expired on the clock, goes barreling into a Florida State defender, runs him over to get into the end zone and score. And remember that the spread of this game when it closed, I think depending on the number you got, was around 24. And the score at the moment that Pyron scores the touchdown is 41-16, which is a 25-point margin. And they didn't let Georgia Tech kick the extra point because time had expired. Bad beat
Hell
city,
yeah.
baby. Bad Hell beat yeah. city.
I thought they actually chose not to. Like, I think you have the choice, and they chose not to.
I don't think they
to.
Give you the choice. I think if it doesn't matter and time is expired, they just tell you, no, game's over.
I love that for me.
Yeah, right? Worked out for you.
Scott was on the right side of that.
Scott earlier in the week was saying, I'm getting a ticket in on Georgia Tech plus 23, and I told him, do not do that. So, what was that Adam Sandler sound once again?
I am the smartest man alive!
Seems relevant. Anyways, please continue, Mike.
I mean, Georgia Tech didn't have any answer for Florida State's passing game. I mean, Jordan Trapp's had 400 yards passing. So.
Nor did they really have an answer for Florida State's defense. First half drive chart, three and out, three and out, field goal, punt, three and out, three and out, three and out. Not great. Like,
no. This went exactly how I thought it would.
I mean, Florida State, again, they were sloppy, I think, in a number of cases. I mean, 13 penalties for 104 yards. They were minus two in turnovers. One of them in particular was pretty ridiculous. There was a sequence, and this is their second possession of the game. It's late in the first quarter. Florida State gets the ball at they work the ball down inside the 10-yard line there at the 9. Jordan Travis completes a pass to Micah Pittman for 6 yards, and now they're at the 3. They call a timeout to avoid the play clock running out. They get out there. They run for two. So now they're at the one. They call another timeout. Again, this is still like mid-first quarter, basically. They call another timeout, I guess just not liking the look. And then they come out of this second timeout in consecutive plays, drop the snap. Charlie Thomas picks it up for Georgia Tech and runs it back like 80 yards to set up that field goal. Like, good stuff, Florida State. So they're clearly a little bit sleepy here at noon in Tallahassee.
Yeah. But lucky for them, they were playing Georgia Tech.
That helps. That'll help to work off a hangover.
It does. And you can really just insert name here. And there's like five teams you could put in there. But good thing they were playing Team X.
We really could stand to make a new bit on this show of the ACC playoff contenders of the week, which is the bottom four playoff. Because there's more teams than there are spots in that that are contenders for bottom four in the ACC.
I forget bottom four in the ACC, bottom four in the Power Five. You can make the case for several teams.
Mm-hmm. So one more note here that I will mention is if you're looking at this and saying you got to fire Brent Key, you're like, oh, he's screwed. There's no way you can hire him, dude. This does not reflect on Brent Key. Like, you're without your quarterback. You're going up against Florida State. Like, at some point, I give him credit for playing the true freshman, playing Pyron. And by the way, it wasn't just like a play him for a couple drives and then take him out again. He stuck with him the whole game. I liked it. And I thought he played a lot better than Zach Gibson did. So I give him credit for that. This was just, you know, by the way, there was also a coaching call. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. Coming out of halftime, Georgia Tech is kicking off to Florida State, gets an onside kick and gets it, and then goes down and scores a touchdown right out of halftime. Like, that's a really good sign. That's a good thing to see. So, you know, they're playing to win the game. I like that aggressive call and the way that it worked out. So, I don't know. I don't really blame a blowout loss here on Brent Key, is all I'm saying. So, if you felt like this is the thing that should disqualify him from the head coaching search, think again. Like, this went about the way it should have, with the way that Georgia Tech's roster is the shape that it's in right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you're blaming this on Brent Key, you're probably one of those people that just doesn't want Brent Key in the first place.
Yeah, sure.
Right? You're not like a neutral, you're not really a neutral fan, right? Saying that, yeah, I want Brent Key to be the head coach, and this is why we can't hire him. Like, nobody rational is going to be saying that coming out of this, I don't think.
And I'm not saying that he is. So. And I'm not saying that they should hire him.
Right.
I'm just saying that if he's a candidate, this doesn't disqualify him. Like,
this is not the data point for no, we're not hiring him.
And the other thing people might point out is, oh, well, he was the offensive line coach, and the offensive line has sucked. And it's like, okay, well, yes, but there's some other context there with injuries and players getting medical DQs, and Jeff Collins didn't want to recruit any offensive linemen in his first class, and some nonsense like that, that again, I don't fully ascribe to Brent Key and his ability to coach an offensive line. So I'm keeping an open mind is all I'm saying. I'm not saying Key is the guy. I'm not saying he isn't.
They've shown more under Key than they did under Jeff Collins in like 3.5 years or whatever.
Sure
it was.
Have. So. They kind of looked better with Pyron at quarterback under Key than they did at times with Sims at quarterback under Collins. I mean, goodness.
Says everything you need to
sure
know.
Sure does. Florida State 41, Georgia Tech 16. Mike, should we talk about your alma mater, or do you want to keep putting that off?
No, let's get this over with.
The number 24 NC State Wolfpack, 22 Virginia Tech, 21. This was a game. It was something.
It was something. Yeah, it was something.
NC State kicks a field goal as time expires in the first half to take a 3-0 lead into halftime. So, by the way, this was one of two games this weekend that went into halftime at 3-0. So the ACC really just putting on a show for the rest of college football this weekend.
Can you believe the overhead here?
I can't.
Okay. Yes, okay.
Impossible.
Continue, sorry.
And I'm not going to take up too much time here. You know this a lot better than I do. I was more just astounded that Virginia Tech came out of halftime and three of their first four possessions go for touchdowns, including an 80-yard pass, or I guess an 85-yard touchdown to Caleb Smith. I mean, just ridiculous. Like how I do basically nothing on offense for the entire first half and then come out like gangbusters in the second half and then stop, you know, stop playing offense again and then lose. I mean, just the way this happened was really wonky.
This was a this is a tale of three games for Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. So game one is the first half version of Virginia Tech in which they had four punts and a fumble. They were trailing 3-0 at the half. Then the next game is Virginia Tech's offense coming out of the second half in which they scored touchdowns on their first two possessions. Then they fumbled, and then they scored another touchdown on the following possession to take a 21-3 lead. And then it's, that offense that reared its ugly head in the first half and most of the season, it's back. Punt, punt, punt on the final three possessions of the game offensively. Meanwhile, the defense gave up three consecutive touchdowns to NC State after playing pretty well to start the second half and really the entire first half. The defense just kind of stopped playing late in the game. So this is this basically epitomizes Virginia Tech's season. Virginia Tech had 12 penalties in this game. 10 of them were false starts.
Woof.
So I think if there's one area I would look at Virginia Tech sitting here at,
sorry.
If there was one area I had to kind of like go back like 30,000 foot view and be like, why did I think Virginia Tech could make a bowl game and like why was I so wrong? I was really wrong about how bad the offensive line is.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the line would be better and they are far worse than I thought. I mean, you have 13 penalties for 69 yards and 10 of them are false starts. Like at some point you got to stop jumping offside. Like the offensive line just week after week after week after week just comes back and bites this offense in the ass. And the offense isn't that good to begin with. So you have all that stuff happen. It's just not a recipe for success. Virginia Tech's been struggling to run the football all year, too. They didn't run it particularly well in this game. Malachi Thomas had 9 carries for 21 yards. He was the leading rusher. Grant Wells had 2 touchdown runs at the quarterback position. Non-sack adjusted, 11 carries for 17 yards. It was not good.
I love a stat line like that. That's 11 carries for 17 yards with a long of 20.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was sacked 4 times, by the way.
It was bad, man. Yeah, he was sacked 4 times. So, I don't know, man. Like, I will say this about NC State. They got a quarterback in MJ Morris. Mm-hmm. They have a quarterback in MJ Morris. Kid's a freshman. Came in. In relief of Jack Chambers, threw 3 touchdown passes, had 265 yards passing.
Yep.
He's a stud.
He's the guy.
He's a stud.
Forward, man.
He's going to be good. Yeah. Highly touted recruit, too. Mm-hmm. So, like, this is kind of what you've been waiting for. I mean, this will be the quarterback moving forward for NC State. They would be crazy to continue to run Jack Chambers out there. I think it's pretty clear that MJ Morris is the guy. And he will be the guy moving into the future, so you may as well play him now. NC State somehow 6-2. And good for them, because without Devin Leary, I wasn't sure how this was going to go. Virginia Tech was a 2-touchdown underdog here, and you know, I picked NC State to cover. And for a while there, it looked like they were going to lose outright by multiple scores, but then Virginia Tech remembered they were Virginia Tech, so that didn't happen. And, this basically epitomizes the season. Like, Virginia Tech's not very good. They go through stretches where they look like they're well-coached, and they go through stretches where they look like they're not very well-coached. So it's just the players aren't good enough, and the coaches are – it's been a mixed bag. You know, there's been a lot of good. I think, you know, the defense looks like a Brent Pry coach defense where – you know, I don't think they have the talent yet, but the scheme is obviously pretty good. And this is why you hire somebody like Brent Pry, because, you know, the defenses at Penn State were solid. And lo and behold, he's got players that don't really fit his scheme, but the defense has kind of held its own for most of the year. It hasn't been like a great defense, but it's been average to above average most of the year, which I think a lot of Tech fans would have taken coming into the season. But the offense has been really, really bad, like way worse than I thought. Mm-hmm. So credit NC State for battling back at home. this is a bit really bad loss for Virginia Tech, but it's a lost season, so like I don't know how much this really matters, to be honest. Sure. A lot of fans were really, really mad after the game, like real mad at like the coaching staff saying, fire this guy, fire that guy, get rid of this guy, get rid of that guy. Then I remember like a lot of these Virginia Tech fans on the timeline like weren't alive during the last Virginia Tech rebuild, right? Like I'm 30, and this is my first Virginia Tech rebuild. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these kids on social media complaining about this are younger than me, so they've never been through this before. But like it's going to take some time, and this is a really bad roster left over, especially in the trenches. Way worse than I thought. So just give it some time. There's no patience, though. People are just real mad, mm-hmm. which is fine. But like this game does not – Virginia Tech was 2-5 coming into this game. Like this game does – like on its face, it's frustrating, right, because it's a game that Virginia Tech could have won. But like this game does not matter. Like this team's probably not going to a bowl game. This is a really bad team. So what? I don't – think this really matters.
It's funny when you talk about the rebuild and you got to remember, I mean, it's funny with the way that we treat coaches these days. Like Frank Beamer would have never become anything close to what he was at Virginia Tech. It took him until year 7 to get to a bowl game. Like they didn't even make a bowl game until 93 after he took over in 1987. Right. So
it took a while.
It did. And I'm not saying that this will or should take a while, but it's just, you know, give it more than like 8 weeks for the team, for the coaching staff to fix roster issues, which you can't really fix mid-season. Like this, there's no free agent market technically. There's no, you know, some of these things. I thought that the story of this game for me, or one of the really interesting storylines at least, was the NC State quarterback situation. And you talked about MJ Morris coming in for Jack Chambers and Morris, the freshman and a high potential kind of guy. But in a way, it was also the way that they managed the quarterback situation, because Jack Chambers played the first two drives. Then MJ Morris played the next two drives. And then Jack Chambers came back into the game. And then Morris came back into the game before halftime. And then Morris played the entire second half. And so there was like this ping-ponging thing between quarterbacks drive to drive for NC State in the first half, which is kind of bizarre. But I think they made the right call. Just let Morris play. And we've said, I mean, he's got a much higher potential, I think, with his arm in particular. He is going to be a much better passer than Jack Chambers is. And so I think that's the thing going forward. And I realize that you're still ranked, and you've still got things that you're playing for, and you're trying to win 8-9 games this year. But I kind of feel like you just need to rip the Band-Aid off. Unless you get to a game where it's like, we just need to run the hell out of the ball, so we're just going to run Jack Chambers out there. Like, if it's an opponent that's anything close to an equal match where you're going to need to throw it on a consistent basis to win, then you need to be just throwing the freshman out there and come what may. Like, this is the situation you're in.
I mean, are they really losing that much by playing Morris? Like, they don't have anything in the passing game with Jack Chambers. He adds a really nice rushing element at the quarterback position they didn't have with Devin Leary. But, like, they're not losing anything in the passing game. And MJ Morris, like, he showed he can get outside the pocket in this game and move.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't think they're going to – they're not going to be in a situation here where, like, oh, MJ Morris, then he's a bona fide pocket passer. He's not going to give you anything in the running game at the quarterback position. It's going to be more like Devin Leary again.
No, he's like, plenty athletic.
He's plenty athletic, yeah. So I think this kind of provides you the best of both worlds and a little bit more in the passing game than you would get out of Chambers. So – I think you roll with Morris. Plus, I mean, this is a good time to get experience under his belt, and they have a good team, and they should just keep kind of rolling forward with good players around him and just see what he's got. So I think you roll with Morris. The only reason I think NC State might be hesitant is maybe they don't want to burn a red shirt there. But at this point, like, NC State's got a good, like you mentioned, Joey, like, they got a good team here. So you can make a New Year's Six game with this team. So you may as well just see what you got, and that'd be a great experience for Morris and big time bowl game. And I mean, this is still a very solid NC State team despite all the injuries.
Yeah. I mean, your final four games: home against Wake Forest, home against Boston College, at Louisville, at North Carolina. Like, telling me you can't go potentially 3-1 against that stretch? It's up there. But like you said, I mean, the biggest thing you're losing with going from Jack Chambers to MJ Morris is just experience, and he might make more mistakes than Chambers would, or that kind of thing. So just got to decide, I guess, if you're going to live with that. But there's a lot more plays that Morris is going to make that Chambers won't. So that's the other side of that coin.
Yep.
Anything else here, Mike? You ready to move on?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Well, I have one thing. Virginia Tech now ranks second to last in the country in penalties behind our Bowling Green Falcons.
Hell yeah. Go ACC, baby. That was the other thing I was going to respond to. I thought about was, you know, you talk about like 10 false starts out of 12 penalties, and I think ideally what I would want to see from a coaching staff at that point is, you know, you pull a couple of guys and say, you know, you take a couple plays off. We're going to let somebody else play that maybe knows the snap count or something like that. The problem is that Virginia Tech's roster is so depleted that that is just going to absolutely torpedo whatever drive you're on if you're getting offensive linemen out of the game. Like, the guys that are out there aren't that good. The guys that are not out there are worse, like, are really bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're kind of between a rock and a hard place there trying to create accountability, but also you're going to torpedo your offense until you just ignore it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
NC State 22, Virginia Tech 21. Two more here, Mike. And honestly, we've kind of done this whole thing in reverse because these were probably the two most impactful, like, best games of the day.
I don't care. I'm a sicko.
Guilty as charged.
Isolate that. Yeah, I was going to say, isolate that.
Guilty as charged.
Go ahead, clip that. Yep.
Notre Dame 41, the number 16 Syracuse Orange 24. This thing just totally got away from Syracuse in the second half.
Could not hang in the trenches,
yeah,
baby.
They couldn't.
Could not hang in the trenches. I don't want to say this went exactly how I thought, because it didn't. Like, Notre Dame, I thought, was pretty impressive from the jump, and to the point where, like, Syracuse was kind of out of this game a bit going into halftime. I was like, man, 21-7, but it feels like Syracuse is down like 5 scores. And then Syracuse kind of fought their way back in. Like, they played a pretty good third quarter, kind of got their way back into it, made it competitive again. And then Notre Dame just kind of stepped on them again in the fourth quarter. So Syracuse has had trouble stopping the run. Mm-hmm. We talked about that in the preview. They struggled against Clemson. Clemson had over 300 yards. When you take out the sacks last week running the football, Will Shipley obviously had a huge game. We talked about going in how it was going to be a Will Shipley game against Syracuse, and it was. Notre Dame basically just decided they were going to run it right up the gut against Syracuse's defense. Syracuse's interior defensive line just got manhandled in this football game, right up the middle of the defense. They really just had trouble stopping Notre Dame's rushing attack. It was pretty apparent from the start that that's the kind of game it was going to be for Notre Dame. Like, Drew Pine was 9 of 19 for 116 yards, had a touchdown and interception. But it was clear that this was going to be, we're going to run it down their throat. We're going to see if they can stop it. If they stop it, we'll turn it a passing game, right? Audric Estime had 20 carries for 123 yards and 2 touchdowns. Logan Diggs had 20 for 85 and a score. Right up the gut, all game
40
long.
40 carries for 208 yards and 3 scores.
That'll play.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the entire game. That was the entire game.
Run the dang ball,
Garrett
Bobo.
Schrader. Man, Garrett Schrader, he didn't look great in the first half, and they left the game at halftime. Coming out of halftime, they were saying that he was injured, he wasn't going to play anymore. Carlos Del Rio Wilson came in, and I thought added a different look in the running game for Syracuse. We talked about something similar in the Clemson game last week with Clemson's quarterback situation when DJU went out and Cade Klubnik came in. It was a different type of runner. We got that a little bit here in this game with Syracuse's quarterback situation, right? Because Garrett Schrader is more of, I'm going to run you over, similar to DJU, whereas Carlos Del Rio Wilson has a little bit more wiggle. And there was a different element in the running game and the escapability outside the pocket. He only had 6 carries for 5 yards, but when you saw it was in the rollout game, kind of escaping the pocket when the play was breaking down in ways that you didn't necessarily see with Garrett Schrader. He's just more of like power runner, I'm going to run you over. So that was different.
I felt like Del Rio Wilson looked better throwing the ball.
He did. I thought so too. So, I mean, Syracuse's offense, I thought in the second half, kind of got a little shot in the arm, a little bit of a jolt with Del Rio Wilson back there. He's not perfect, but he gives them a little bit of something. And, you know, is he going to take over for Schrader? Schrader's healthy? No, he's not. But is he going to be a guy that, that moving forward into the future is, you know, going to be a viable option at quarterback? I mean, I think so. But, you know, Syracuse's weakness is stopping the run. Notre Dame's strength, at least how they want to be perceived, is a team that at their best offensively is just going to power run you to death, which is what they've been under Brian Kelly. And it's what they kind of want to be under Marcus Freeman, is they want to dominate the line of scrimmage. And Notre Dame's been able to do that with how they've recruited, for the most part, against teams like Syracuse in the past decade. This is the type of team that, on paper, it's like, oh, Syracuse could give Notre Dame some trouble on Saturday. Syracuse has a pretty good team. And then Notre Dame's like, no, we got like multiple guys over 300 pounds that are just going to run.
It's going to lean on you.
Run you into the ground. Yeah. So this is a culture game for Notre Dame. They were just going to kind of beat Syracuse down, and that's what they did. This game was won in the trenches.
Yep. That's the simplest way of putting it. I'll say this too. Syracuse got the ball to start the game. They ran 8 offensive plays, scored a touchdown, and they were tied 7-7. Because their first play of the game was Garrett Schrader making just a horrendous decision, and it ended up in a pick six. And that immediately puts you in a hole. And the reason I point that out is because I felt like there were a couple of moments throughout this game where Syracuse made a few bad mistakes. Like, they hung with Notre Dame for a lot of that first half. And it was 21-7 at halftime, but, I mean, Syracuse's defense was hanging in there, and everything was I don't know, it felt like the game was within reach for sure, but they made a couple of pretty bad mistakes that led to touchdowns, that led to things just kind of starting to snowball on them. So I don't think that Notre Dame is like inherently 17 points better than Syracuse here. I thought Syracuse had enough bad moments in this game that it just totally got away from them. I'll say this too, and I texted the group this as I was kind of doing the rewatch. If we find out going into next week that Garrett Schrader is injured and just straight up is not going to be able to play, or he's going to be limited or something like that, I don't know how much it changes my handicap of Syracuse, because I liked a lot of what I saw from Carlos Del Rio Wilson. I thought he threw the ball very well. He did this thing, I thought, throughout the game. It was kind of weird seeing where at times he would throw the ball to Aronde Gadsden, and at times he threw the ball to Sean Tucker. And then there were other times where he threw the ball to other receivers. So it was like there were like different players on the Syracuse offense that got to touch the ball. It was kind of strange to watch.
That is odd, I would say. That's weird. Out of
the
ordinary.
There were 16 completed passes in this game. 8 of them went to Aronde Gadsden and Sean Tucker, but the other 8 went to DeMarcus Adams, Amari Hatcher, Damian Alford, and Trebor Pena.
Who?
Right? Like, I don't know if any of these players have touched the ball yet this season, but now that Garrett Schrader's not out there playing favorites, you know, who knows? I'm joking, obviously, but, you know, I don't know. It's fine. You're correct. I mean, the simplest way that Syracuse lost this game is that Notre Dame just bullied them in the trenches. And that's probably the thing that I missed in handicapping this game, is that Syracuse's defense, as good as they have been, they are kind of undersized in the front 7. And if there's one thing that Notre Dame's offensive line is not, it is undersized. They are
correct.
Big, bad, mean, physical, all that. And so, yeah, I mean, when Drew Pine only has to throw 19 passes and you score 41 points, like, it's pretty clear what happened there.
And this isn't even a good Notre Dame offensive line relative to their standards. Yeah. Like, they're not terrible, but this is not a really good Notre Dame offensive line like we're used to seeing either.
Yep.
So it kind of shows a talent gap. Two things real quick. So we have a Sean Tucker tweet.
Oh, my body is ready.
I'm going to read this first. Okay. Because I have another one that I'm going to read as well that's making fun of Sean Tucker. Here's the first one. This is Sean Tucker himself. Saturday we lost Syracuse 24, Notre Dame 41. Sorry, I can't even do this with a straight face. I'm not pleased with the outcome of the game. It just wasn't our day. I'm not pleased with my performance, so I'm grinding harder this week on and off the field. I rushed for 60 yards and TD. I don't know why I say it like that.
That's how he wrote it.
Hashtag please. Scott, producer Scott, Joey, my son just turned 4 months old. If I gave him the old, quill and ink, so to speak, I think he could pen a tweet that's a little bit better than Sean Tucker's.
I just keep telling myself that Syracuse has a very well-renowned, like, journalism broadcast school. I think he's practicing. I think he's practicing what he learns in class. That has to be... I don't even know what his major is. That has to be the answer, Mike.
Some third-grade reading level-head assery. Okay, let's go to Notre Dame defensive back Brandon...
By the way,
sorry.
One other little, like, minor note there is... I'm seeing questions in a couple different corners of the college football internet where people are asking, is this a bit or is this serious? Like his Twitter account? And nobody knows the answer. Nobody knows if he's serious or not.
I wonder, and I've always wondered, is this even a real account? That's what I'm... Is this actually him or are we just assuming it's him? I don't know. Okay, so let's go over to Notre Dame defensive back Brandon Joseph, because, Joey, you referenced the pick six, right? The pick six off the bat. That was Brandon Joseph who ran that back, 29 yards for a Notre Dame touchdown to start the game. First
I
play.
Saw this. I did not realize that that was a Notre Dame player. Go ahead.
Yes.
Oh my God.
There is a screenshot of Brandon Joseph stuffing Sean Tucker from this game, a screenshot,
like a
right?
A full-on WWE spinebuster, basically.
Yes, yes. Brandon Joseph's tweet reads, "Today we defeated Syracuse, and I am hashtag pleased with a 34, like Sean Tucker would write, with my performance."
Oh, God, that's incredible. It's perfect.
This guy gets it. He just gets it.
This is the greatest sport on earth, Mike. I will hear no different.
I mean, He let it marinate for like a couple hours after the game. He's like, "Should I hit send on this tweet?" And he goes, "You know what? What the hell? I'm firing on it."
We need to get the Herm Edwards sound. Don't click send.
Oh yeah, we'll add that to our arsenal.
Syracuse is fine. He'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Nobody else on your schedule has an offensive line like that. And honestly, I don't know if anybody left on the schedule actually has even like a decent offensive line. So we'll see.
Yeah, it'll be a different type of game if Syracuse were to lose one, like the next four. It'll be a different reason, I think. It won't be because they got dominated up front. But maybe I'm wrong.
Yep. Notre Dame 41, Syracuse 24. Last one, Mike. We'll keep moving, go kind of quickly here. The number 21, North Carolina Tar Heels, 42, Pittsburgh 24.
Tried to tell you.
No. I am so mad with the way that this like all happened.
Tried to tell you.
Pittsburgh had the lead through three quarters here. I was right, and then I wasn't.
Yeah, and then North Carolina said, "Oh, wait a second. We have Drake May.
What's better than this? And guys being dudes."
He's really, really good.
He is.
Really, really good,
so good,
man.
388 through the air, I mean, and five touchdowns, along with being the team's leading rusher with 61 yards on the ground. I mean,
I'm pretty sure he set a school record for consecutive games or most games in a season with five touchdowns or more. I can't remember exactly what the stat was. That's good podcasting.
It's him,
there.
Lamar Jackson, but, and there's one other quarterback from recent memory. I don't know if it's Deshaun Watson or someone else, Trevor Lawrence maybe, that in like career five touchdown games, he's tied them in the ACC history. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's get this out of the way here so we don't waste any more time with this conversation. Drake May's NFL good.
Yes.
Okay.
Drake May's
just want to make
leader
sure
in the clubhouse by a mile to win ACC Player of the Year.
Yes. You posed a question to Scott and I. Hey, should we bring this up? You were like, should we bring this up on the podcast? Like, who's the ACC Player of the Year through like in the first little over halfway through the year? And I was like, Drake May? And you're like, yeah, we can make the case for a couple other guys. And then you thought about it. You're like, nah, you know what, Drake May.
It's like, this isn't even worth talking about if it's that obvious.
Right. Right. So, yeah, I mean, Carolina just basically hit the gas in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. That's basically what happened here. I mean, I thought Pitt played fine. I mean, I thought the game plan was pretty much what we thought it would be. They were going to try to run the ball with Izzy Abandikanda and just take the ball out of Carolina's hands as much as they could. It worked for a while, but eventually, like, you're going to have to punt, and then you're going to have to get some stops, and not a lot of teams can stop Carolina's offense right now. So that's basically it. Like, that's kind of how this went. So Pitt played better than I thought. I mean, they were right in this game later than I thought. I thought they'd hang around early. They did. But they ended up hanging around longer than I expected, and Carolina just hit the gas, man. That
was it. I was going to say, Pitt got the ball, or I guess North Carolina started with the ball at a halftime. They go 5 plays, 20 yards, and punt. Pitt gets the ball, goes 5 plays, 83 yards, touchdown. They take a 24-14 lead about 5 minutes into the second half. And from there, the Carolina offense goes touchdown, 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 end of game. As they scored, 28 straight points unanswered to end the game. Pitt still hasn't scored since then. So, yeah. Pitt seemed like they kind of had things under control. And then North Carolina scores 21 in the fourth quarter and just seemed pretty unstoppable at that point. And it was I was right through three quarters. But, I talked to a couple guys at the sports book about that earlier, and they said that that doesn't really matter. So, yeah, it happens.
Speaking of the sports book, I bet over 65 and a half here. So
yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Cash that ticket.
That last touchdown was significant to some.
It sure was. Yeah. As
some being
Carolina, scored, got in the end zone there with, 9 minutes or so left. And then Pitt goes, turns it over on downs, and then Carolina runs out the final 5.5 minutes, basically, which, well done.
The total was 62.5, on Wednesday. So I could have had this by 3 or 4 points.
It's a double barrel lock.
Instead, I waited. Instead, I waited. But it didn't matter.
I have to sweat it out even that much more.
That's
Keaton
right.
Slovis is not it, Mike.
He sucks.
Not, I feel like saying he sucks is a little bit of a strong way of saying it, but, it's not great.
He was 14 of 31 passing. That's less than 50%. He kind of sucks.
I want to go to a...
That Carolina... This isn't a good Carolina defense, Joey. It was 14 of 31 passing. Let's call it what it is.
No, he's not good. And it's funny, though, looking at it, because he completed 14 passes to a grand total of 3 receivers. Jared Wayne, Bub Means, and Kanata Mumfield caught all 14 of the completed passes.
Yeah.
Jared Wayne had 7 catches for 161, by the way. So
He's a dude.
I do want to go to a reference an old Nick Saban quote when I look at Pat Narduzzi and I say, is this what we want offense to be? Is this what we want? Because, Izzy Abanikanda, like we said, had a pretty good day. 26 carries for 127 yards and 3 touchdowns. And I thought Carolina's defense played better than I expected them to against that, but he still got his for sure. But I guess they had to kind of get away from the run there in the fourth quarter as they were chasing points. And the moment that Pitt has to abandon the run is a bad moment for Pitt football right now. That passing attack is not a well-oiled machine by any stretch of the imagination.
You know what's funny about Pittsburgh is that the funny thing is that, Pat Narduzzi, he runs off Mark Whipple. And he's thinking about it and he's like, you know what? I'm going to run him off because I trust the way that I can coach defense and my teams play defense. Yeah. And then his defenses aren't good enough to overcome the fact that you can't outscore North Carolina, right? A Mark Whipple coached offense, I don't know about with Keaton Slovis necessarily, but a Mark Whipple coached offense could have at least had a chance to keep up.
Sure could have.
And defense hung in there for a while, but I think the whole defenses win championships adage is kind of out the window in modern college football. You just got to score, man. Look what Tennessee's doing. You just got to score. And Pitt wants to do things the old-fashioned way under Narduzzi, and I don't think that's going
to
work long-term.
Narduzzi wants to do the things the old-fashioned way. Credit to Frank Cignetti Jr. I bet he's going to get a raise after this year for doing it Narduzzi's way.
I mean, you just look in the bank account, you say, wait, my paychecks are cashing? Okay. Whatever you want, sir.
Pitt is going to a bowl game, right? They're 4-4. Final four games: home against Syracuse, at Virginia, home against Duke, at Miami. I'd say pretty much every one of those games is winnable and losable.
I think they probably go 2-2.
Coin flip city, and go to a bowl game at 6-6.
Yep.
And do we know what the magic number is for North Carolina in the Coastal Division?
it's almost zero at this point, isn't it? Like, I'm looking at this. They are 7-1. The next closest team is Duke at 5-3, but Carolina has
4-0 in conference.
Yes, and Carolina
has the win over Duke.
Has the win over Duke already? You're right. I was looking at overall, not conference standings. I'm sorry. Duke's 2-2. Miami's 2-2. Carolina's beat both of them already. So Carolina essentially has they're like three games clear in the Coastal.
Mm-hmm.
So that whip, I'm pretty sure they can clinch in 2 weeks.
If they beat Georgia Tech when is that? I guess that's the weekend before Thanksgiving. No, Georgia Tech isn't winning until then. So, I mean, yeah, they're about to wrap this thing up when they get to like 5-0. Yeah, they'll have that wrapped up.
This could be, I mean, mathematically, I think Carolina could actually win the division if they beat UVA and if Duke and or Miami lose.
Yep.
Because Georgia Tech's too far behind. Like, Carolina would have to lose three times.
Well, and if Carolina has the win over Duke and Miami, they would both need to win out. And then Carolina lose out after beating Virginia. So, yeah, I mean, you're potentially like away from Carolina clinching the division.
Yeah, I'm going to need to verify that. But I think Carolina can clinch if they beat UVA on Saturday. Pretty sure. Joey, question. 12-1 North Carolina, ACC champion. Is that a playoff team?
I don't know, man. The strength of schedule is not great. I mean, FAMU, App State, Georgia State, Notre Dame, and Notre Dame was the loss. And then playing in the ACC Coastal.
If Notre Dame wins out, Carolina wins out, Notre Dame finishes the season 9-3. That's Carolina's only loss. And Carolina just beat Clemson in the ACC championship game. It's probably going to be a top 4-5 team at the time.
I don't think so.
Does that team go to the playoff?
I don't think so. Not this year. Not with the way things are shaking out between Ohio State, Michigan, Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, not to mention all the Pac-12 teams. Like, I don't think 12-1 Carolina makes it.
Okay, here's a fun one, because this team is kind of a little bit lower on people's boards. I know we're running long, but TCU is undefeated. Mm-hmm. TCU has been kind of winning games by the skin of their teeth here and there. But they're like a top 6 or 7 team in the country, right? Neutral field, you taking Carolina or TCU?
Probably TCU right now. I think I trust TCU's defense a little bit more than I trust Carolina's. Like,
I agree. You trust in TCU's offense as much as you trust Carolina's offense?
That's more of a push. Maybe Carolina gets a slight edge there. But if I'm trying to figure out who can get like 4 stops throughout the game, I think I trust TCU to do that more than Carolina.
Yeah.
But
it'll be a fun conversation.
Man, I was peeved with how
they're not going to do that though.
TCU wins 41-31 at West Virginia. They scored a touchdown with like 30 seconds left in a game where West Virginia was like a 7.5 point dog, and I had them in a pick 'em contest.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Gross. Anyways,
that's a battle.
Yep. Mike, that's all I got on games this weekend. Do you want to give us some awards?
That was thorough.
It was thorough.
Yes.
Let's do it. Scott, cue the music. The Go ACC Moment of the Week is where I'm actually seeing this game. Because we referenced a situation that happened late in the Miami-Virginia game that I don't know that I can necessarily do it justice. Producer Scott, can you please walk us through exactly what we spent about 12 minutes of our lives on trying to figure out what was going on?
Yeah, so Miami's driving down the field. At the end of the fourth quarter, and they're clearly not really trying that hard, but they're on like the 5-yard line. And
trying hard enough.
There is about a minute left running clock, and there's a false start. Well, the false start causes a lot of confusion about how much time's left. Are they doing the 10-second runoff? Are they not doing the 10-second runoff? Meanwhile, I'm looking at this game on a second screen. I keep looking down. Every time I'm looking down, Mario Cristobal is asking the refs how much time's left. It takes no less than 10 actual minutes to figure out that there's 37 seconds left, to the point of which, once they start the clock again, Miami runs it down 20 more seconds and calls a timeout.
Hell yeah.
Do you remember how many times they went to the monitor to like there were at least two, if not three, trips to the monitor to like go review and try to discuss and figure it out?
I saw at least twice. There might have been a third. I don't know, but it was ridiculous.
And all of that resulting in Miami calling a timeout to avoid a delay of game penalty is fantastic. Go ACC to that.
Rich. Good coaching, too.
As we expected from Mario's team. Anyways, the Brian Van Gorder Memorial You Tried Award this week goes to the Wake Forest Steaming Deeks, who, they tried, damn it, to break the record of turnovers. And they almost got there with eight. Six, yes. Third quarter. Good try, Wake. You almost got there.
I mean, Miami set the record a week ago. 13 years since a team in the Power 5 had turned the ball over as much as Miami did with those eight turnovers against Duke. It had been the first time since 2017 that a team had turned the ball over in an FBS game as much as Miami did against Duke. It took 1 week for Wake Forest to turn the ball over as much as Miami did. Eight turnovers.
Bold strategy, Cotton. We'll see if it works out for them.
They tried to break the record.
The Kobe Bryant Memorial Volume Shooter of the Week Award might go to the entire Miami offense, short of Henry Parrish Jr.
So many candidates this week. It's hard to keep track.
Yeah, there was a lot of setting offense back in the conference this week. So I guess Miami's offense, other than Henry Parrish, NC State's rushing attack, 34 carries for 60 yards. Not great. Virginia Tech's rushing attack, 26 carries for 50 yards.
All those were at the top of my list. Trying to see if I can. You mentioned Boston College.
Not in the last 30 seconds, but.
Okay. Boston College's leading rusher was Phil Dracovic, 14 for 29. As a team, non-sack adjusted, though, 30 for 76. Pat Garwood the third, 6 for 13.
God. Boston College rushing offense. To that we say, Kobe!
And Kobe.
It's late. Mike. Any other awards to give out before we get to the actual good stuff here?
No.
Yeah. All right. Team of the week. Who you got?
Oh, I think it's going to have to be Louisville.
St. Louisville went in there and got that win.
But if we're talking about a non-ACC candidate. UConn?
Yeah, I'm locking up UConn.
Hell yeah.
Unbelievable. We'll go Louisville. Louisville. I'm not giving it to Miami. I'm not doing it. Player of the week.
You really wanted to. You wanted
to. I kind of wanted to. Player of the week, probably Drake May. He was really good.
Yeah, Drake May or Jordan Travis are the two candidates.
Shout out MJ Morris, too, by the way.
Yeah, that's
not to twist the knife.
That's
but,
solid.
You know, he was good.
That's solid. How about Jared Wayne in a losing effort for Pittsburgh? 7 for 161.
Looking like friggin' Reggie White back there. Wait, who are we talking about? Oh, I meant Jared Verse. Never mind. Jared Verse for Florida State, who looked like Reggie White.
No, I was Pittsburgh wide receiver Jared Wayne does not look like Reggie White. That would be something. That'd be even more impressive.
Yeah, shout out to him as well. Good performance.
Looking like Reggie White.
Yes, I do know what position Reggie White played. Thank you. What side of the ball he played on. Go ACC. Mike, that's all I got. Anything else on week 9?
Nope.
We should come back and preview week 10. We got another busy week.
Double digits now.
Yeah, we're getting into November. We got some weeknight action on Friday, Duke and Boston College. So buckle up your chin strap for some real prime television for that one. I think Duke
is gonna clap that ass.
This is a family program, Mike. Duke is favored by like almost double digits on the road.
What I said. Yes.
So that'll be fun. And then we got a bunch of conference action and a couple of out of conference games too on Saturday, including the Florida State Miami game is coming up this weekend. Mm. So keep it tuned here.
The Tecmo Bowl
as
well.
That's right. Yeah, the Tecmo Bowl, the real Tech for the final time.
I will sadly be in attendance.
Hokies opened as a 4.5-point favorite.
Which kind of feel like whichever team was the underdog, I'd be happy to take that pick. So
I agree with you. Scott, what'd you say,
sir? I will sadly be in attendance for the Tecmo Bowl.
Condolences.
Oh, yeah. Thoughts and prayers.
At least it's at 12:30.
Mike, let's... On Jefferson Pilot, just as the Lord intended.
T's and P's.
Let's get out of here. We'll come back and preview Week 10. In the meantime, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at FGRSJoey. He's at Mike McDaniel, SI. Together we're at PC Podcast ACC. Go find us on YouTube, by the way. Hit the subscribe button. We are building up that subscribership. We're getting close to 100. We need more help. Please get us there. We'll have a dedicated URL for you. Just go to YouTube, search for Basketball Conference, and go from there. You can find us on iTunes and Spotify for just the audio format if you want. You can find us, you can send us an email with your questions, comments, concerns. The longest email address known to man, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you. I think we do have a listener email that we're like way behind on, but we'll get to that. I promise. I swear. We have not forgotten.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
Mike, where else on the social medias?
Facebook. Facebook.com/basketballconference. Rate, review, find all of our podcasts.
All of them. Every one of them.
All of them. Every
find us
one
on
of them.
Insta, on the gram, at BC Podcast ACC. We're everywhere. Go find us. Follow, subscribe, obey, all that stuff.
Bear down.
Bear down. Mike, that's all I got. Anything else?
Think we're
come
good.
Back and preview week 10?
Yeah, let's
do it. We have to. All right. For that guy, Mr. Mike McDaniel, I am Joey Weaver. And for producer Scott, by the way, producer Scott's here too. For Mike McDaniel and producer Scott, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will talk to you again soon. Until next time, go ACC.